Everyone has an opinion when it comes to having a baby and raising kids. Just get the epidural. There's no prize for doing it natural. In my day, we just let the baby cry until they settle themselves down. Have you tried sage oil? And so many more comments, most of them unsolicited. Welcome to the Birth and Parenting Things podcast. My name is Kim, and I've got opinions too. I'm kind of an expert on birth. I've also managed to raise 3 babies into young adults. I'm here to offer evidence-based information, stories, personal experiences on birth, parenting, and everything in between. So let's do this. Hey there, and welcome to Birth and Parenting Things podcast. My name is Kim Fernandez, and I am a doula in Toronto. I am also recently retired from doing birth work, but I work exclusively now as a virtual postpartum support and a childbirth educator for a major hospital in downtown Toronto. There you go. That's a little bit about me. And next, we are going to talk about continue our series on inductions. So just as an aside from last week, bathroom's still not finished, but that's okay. It's plugging along. So I'm very excited about that. And yeah, so let's talk a little bit about medical inductions. Again, as Christmas approaches, we can sometimes, especially in the United States, we can sometimes see that birth is being induced or scheduled so that we can not disrupt the care providers. I'm sure there's other reasons too, but not disrupt the care providers' holiday season. So let's talk about, last week we talked about why inductions are done, the reasons why they're done, and convenience is not one of them, though admittedly for my final birth, there was no medical reason to do an induction. I was not past due. I was not diagnosed with gestational diabetes. It was just the devil I knew, to be honest. I'd been induced with my other two, one for suspected big baby, and my second one was for gestational diabetes, which I actually kind of passed that test, but because my first son had been so big, over 9 pounds, and because there was a history of diabetes in my family through my father, they decided that with my second, even though I just passed, we didn't want what happened with my first son to happen again with my second. So I was under gestational diabetes protocol, and he ended up being like a pound smaller than his brother, which made birth and delivery a lot easier, to be completely honest. So I wish I'd known, though, at the time that there were some things that we could do to sort of move things along, or at least the first time around, what was involved in an induction. Because oftentimes what you'll get is just, yeah, come in for your, and we'll get your labor started, you know, come in on this day and we'll start, you know, we'll get things going. But we're never really told sort of what that might look like. So how do the care providers trick the body into going into labor? Now, are you surprised by that word tricked? I say tricked because in essence, with a medical induction, the care provider is trying to trick the body into going into labor. So through various procedures and medications, the OB or midwife is trying to trick the body into taking over the process of labor. So let's look and see at how they do that. Now, how an induction is started will depend on what the cervix is doing at the start of the process. So they'll usually do a vaginal exam to sort of check and see what's going on, and that'll determine what they'll do first. So if the cervix is closed and thick and firm, the process is going to be longer and it's going to require more work and more procedures. If the cervix is softened and maybe even a little bit dilated, then the care providers have less work to do. So let's start on the basis of, so we can get everything in, let's start on the basis of the cervix being fully closed, firm, and, you know, not doing anything, and still thick, so not effaced. Usually when that happens, they'll start with something called prostaglandin. And prostaglandin is a synthetic hormone that they would use to sort of get the cervix what they would call ripened. So with the cervix not starting to get ready for labor at all, they want to try and soften the cervix up a bit. The most common way to do this is with either a prostaglandin gel or a product, which is an insert of a product called Cervidil. Now, this insert is basically, it's basically looks like a pill on a string that they'll insert into the cervix. Now, these can cause cramping, especially with the Cervidil, though it can easily be removed because it is on a string. With the prostaglandin gel, it's not necessarily as intense as the Cervidil, but that's because it can't necessarily be easily removed. So if your body reacts negatively to it, they can remove it fairly quickly. But with the prostaglandin, that's not possible because it's just a gel that gets squirted onto the cervix. So both of these can cause cramping, and it can get the, basically the idea, the benefits of it is to get the cervix softened and dilated slightly. Side effects for these can, though, include fever and chills, which in this day and age can put you in line for COVID protocols, which may mean, you know, isolation and things like that, and definitely a COVID test. Vomiting, diarrhea as well. Plus, you would need a stretch of continuous fetal monitoring for you and baby just to make sure neither of you is reacting too negatively to it. You would probably also need to have multiple doses of this too, because it doesn't always just work immediately. They would likely redo the dose every 6 to 12 hours. So the next thing that they would do, especially if the cervix, even if the cervix is still long, if it's slightly opened, a smidge, that's a technical term, smidge, if it's slightly dilated, and it doesn't have to be much, half a centimeter, 1 centimeter dilated, the care provider may use what's called a Foley catheter, which is basically a tube with a balloon on the end that they inflate that balloon with sterile saline water. And it's inserted into the cervix to apply pressure and encourage the cervix to open more. And oftentimes you'll know it works because it falls out. So as the cervix opens and dilates more, the Foley catheter will fall out. So they like this to get your cervix dilated to roughly 2 to 3 centimeters. So they may check you every 12 hours or so just to see what's going on. And eventually, when you get to about 2 to 3 centimeters dilated, then there's the next step that they'll do. Now, this is a drug-free method that can be quite effective and is less likely to cause fetal distress or lead to a cesarean birth because of hypercontracting. Side effects can include a risk of infection, discomfort, and possible bleeding as well. Because again, the bleeding actually is kind of normal because as the cervix dilates, bleeding is happening, and that's the bloody show that happens during your labor. Now, once your cervix is dilated to about 2 to 3 centimeters or so, they may do what's called an amniotomy, or the artificial breaking of your waters. Once the cervix is dilated, and if the baby is low enough in the pelvis, they can do this. So they'll use a long crochet needle-like device during a vaginal exam that they'll insert, and the tip of it is actually quite sharp, and they'll scrape it along your amniotic sac to break your waters. And this will flood the cervix with amniotic fluid, which is high in prostaglandin, which we just talked about, natural prostaglandin, and can help the cervix get softened and get the uterus contracting. It's a good idea at this point to ask to walk around for an hour or so after an amniotomy, because what that will do is it will continue to flood the cervix with amniotic fluid and that prostaglandin, but it's also going to utilize gravity to get baby's head, putting more direct pressure onto the cervix, which can invariably get it opening, get it moving. What happens usually after the amniotomy is done is the hospital will usually automatically start Pitocin. But maybe we don't need Pitocin. Maybe we just need you to walk around for a little bit, and that will get your body kicked into gear into doing the labor on its own. But maybe you still need the Pitocin. Maybe that doesn't work and you still need the Pitocin, but at least you tried. Okay, and you're not going to go, oh, I wish we'd done this, I wish we'd done that. Okay, no regrets. The side effects of an amniotomy can include infection, because we are sort of breaking that bag of waters, which is baby's last line of defense to the outside world. And if baby is potentially still a little high in the pelvis at the time, it can cause cord prolapse. And as mentioned, it can get Pitocin being automatically started to augment your contractions. Now, the next and final step is Pitocin. In an induction, Pitocin is the sort of final stage. This is medication that is used to add strength to your contractions and frequency of contractions. And it's administered through an IV, and it started at a very low dose and then gradually increased over time until your contractions are about 2 to 3 minutes apart. Side effects for this can include intense contractions, hypercontracting, fetal distress, so you will definitely be on constant fetal monitoring as a result, and possibly an increased need for a surgical birth. More serious side effects can include uterine rupture, especially if there has been a previous cesarean birth in the mix, and serious bleeding after the birth. There's also, as a result of potentially the fetal distress or hypercontracting, the good side of Pitocin is it actually has a very short half-life in your system. So once it is turned off, things usually calm down fairly quickly. So we can potentially fix some of these side effects and then maybe try again at a lower dose or not increase it quite so fast and see how baby reacts at lower doses. Prolonged use of Pitocin can also potentially block your natural oxytocin from flowing. So as a result, for after the baby is born, I do encourage lots and lots of skin to skin with baby so we can get your own natural oxytocin flowing, which will help with bonding with baby afterwards and body feeding with baby afterwards. We need that natural oxytocin to get things going because Pitocin doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier. While it does get your uterus contracting, it doesn't have those same yummy love properties that oxytocin does. So if you are on Pitocin, especially for an extended period of time, we want to make sure you're doing lots and lots of skin to skin afterwards to get things going well for feeding and for bonding with your baby. Now, as a result of these multiple procedures and medications that come with a medical induction, it can mean that your labor can be much longer than you had anticipated, especially if this is your first baby. Being induced on a Tuesday doesn't mean baby's going to be born on a Tuesday. Baby may not be born until Wednesday or Thursday. Friday? Maybe. So have some patience with this process and hunker down for the long wait. And especially with the ones that we discussed previously, the Foley and the prostaglandin, if those are being utilized, once you've been monitored for a little bit, ask to go home. As long as baby's doing fine in those initial monitorings, especially with a Foley catheter, because there's no medication involved, ask to go home. Ask to go home for that period of time to rest and eat your own food and sleep in your own bed and, you know, do some of your laboring at home. And then they'll ask you to come back when your contractions hit a certain level or 12 hours, whichever comes first, right? So that's definitely something that I would consider. Right. Okay. For me, with my first induction, we had the prostaglandin gel and we did it at 8 a.m. and then we went home and we stayed at home for 6 hours and then we came back and did the gel again and then went home. And so it was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2. So afternoon. And then we went back, or at that point, we'd had some lunch. I really wanted McDonald's for some reason. I actually like McDonald's, so that's probably why. And after that second dose, we had lunch, we came home, and then around 8 o'clock or so, when we were going to be going back to the hospital, contractions had started up and they were fairly intense at that point. And we went back to the hospital and that's when they did the breaking of the waters. And then shortly after that, Pitocin was started and it was very, very hard. It was very, very difficult to get things going. I did, so after many, many hours, I ended up getting a epidural because it was just too intense. It was too much. So all told, my first birth was about 18 hours in length, in total. So it was a lot. And it was kind of 18 hours from the time of contraction starting. So not from the times the initial prostaglandin went in, because things really didn't start until in the early evening time. So keep that in mind. You go home and know that it can take a little bit of time, and that's okay. We're trying to encourage your body to go into labor, and that might not be something it wants to do. So it might need a little bit more time to get things going. Now, next week, we will talk about ways that we can encourage your body to naturally go into labor. And these can be very beneficial for if you already know an induction is coming. So if for whatever reason we know in advance that an induction is coming, doing these things prior to that, in the weeks prior to your induction, can help maybe kick you off the edge faster and maybe not need quite so many procedures. All right, so we will see you next week, and hopefully by then I will have had a nice hot bath in my brand new bathroom, where there will be lots of light and a brand new shower, and everything will be fun and happy. All right, have a good one, everybody. Bye.